Hello, Florida Bar members and Florida registered paralegals. This is a quick reminder from the Standing Committee on Mental Health and Wellness of Florida Lawyers that you are approved to use the Florida Lawyers Helpline, a completely free and confidential around-the-clock helpline designed to support you in managing the challenges of both your personal and professional life. By dialing 833-FL1-WELL or 833-351-9355, you can connect with mental health professionals who are ready to assist you. Take advantage of up to 5 complimentary in-person or telehealth counseling sessions annually, and remember, there's no limit to the number of calls you can make. Reach out today.
You're listening to the Florida Bar Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel. Produced by the broadcast professionals of the Florida Bar.
Welcome to the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. We are so glad you are joining us. This is Autumn Chadwell. I'm a practice management advisor and a host of the show, which is being recorded from our studio in Tallahassee, Florida. Our goal at the Practice Resource Center is to assist Florida attorneys with running the business side of their law practices. You can find all of our resources and free CLEs at legalfuel.com. Hiring in the legal field can be complex. Clearly defining the position you need to fill, attracting qualified applicants, selecting the right candidate, and then completing a successful onboarding process are all important steps for finding and keeping the best person for your team. Molly McGrath is here with us today to discuss the finer points of attracting, selecting, onboarding, and retaining the right employees to help your law firm succeed. Molly is the founder of Hiring and Empowering Solutions, LLC. Since the late 90s, Molly has coached, consulted, and directed presidents and founders of national organizations and over 5,000 law firms, resulting in 29 years of experience in conversation intelligence coaching, team development and leadership, employee empowerment, talent acquisition, revenue mapping, and action-based project management. Molly herself hosts a podcast titled Hire and Empower, and she is a 3-time number one bestselling author. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Oh, thank you for having me, Autumn.
We're so happy you're here. So we are just going to jump right on in. So we're going to start at the beginning of the hiring process, which is realizing that you have a role to fill and then determining your needs versus your wants. Can you talk about the difference and how it will affect the process?
Yeah, I love this question. So often when people come to me and they know they need to hire, they tend to throw everything they don't want to do into one bucket. So step number one is being incredibly clear on what you need. Is it post-engagement and production, a paraprofessional, paralegal, legal assistant, attorney position? I always tell my clients to ask yourself this question. Does this require an attorney? Does this require a paralegal? To get really clear on that, do you need somebody in the front of the house or the back of the house? And often people will say both, but you need to lead with your greatest pain point. In my experience, most paralegals like paper, not necessarily people. And when people go hiring, they're like, oh, this person didn't work out. I've had a disaster with that person. And a lot of times, because they're not hiring people for their unique ability, they're putting paralegals on front of the house, answer phone, intake, things of that nature. And their DNA and their Colby or their DISC or some of the assessments that you should be using throughout the hiring process, they're just not wired that way. So they're taking the position, assuming maybe that's 5% of the work, or of course, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to fill in and help. But it turns out that that's not what happens, especially if you have turnover or you have people leave throughout the process, maybe your intake person, and then we just assume that we can put somebody who is more paper-driven, contract-driven, process-driven in the front of the house. And that's really where I see you have to get incredibly clear on your greatest need, not necessarily your want. Once you get your needs filled, then your entrepreneurial headspace, your visionary headspace is cleared up, and then you can really start to craft that next position for growth and scaling, whatever that means for you. I invite your guests right now, if you're having frustration or maybe your person's not quote unquote getting it, go back and revisit their current job descriptions or KPIs, which is all the buzzword in the legal field anymore, and maybe sit down with them, have a cup of coffee and a chat, and just get really clear on what lights them up. I always find paralegals, legal assistants saying, oh, My job would be great. I could get my work done, but for ... the phones. So you hear smile and dial. Somebody who is in the front of the house answering the phones, doing intake. I like to call them the chief happiness officer. They have to love the phones.
Oh, absolutely. It comes through on the phone if somebody is not enjoying their job. A good phone presence makes so much of a difference.
I can tell a lot. When I call law firms, sometimes I'll do secret shopping with the firms I work with and helping them do intake and what have you. And I can always tell when a paralegal that does not love the phones is answering the phone. And maybe this will resonate with you, where they pick up the phone and they say, law office. And you could tell the, you know, the old school way, where I'm like, oh, that's somebody who is not happy about having to pitch in and answer the phones.
Right. And it makes you not want to call back or look for further help. You hear the same thing about medical offices, about receptionists who answer the phone and they don't want to be there and it doesn't seem like they want to help. So you don't want to call that person back.
Yes.
Wonderful. So once you've determined what you need, what is the best way to design an advertisement that will attract the kind of applicants you're looking for?
This is really revolutionary and sort of hard for law firms to shift their brain set here. In the legal space, the unemployment rate is 1.2%. In almost 30 years, I have not seen it this low. So if anybody is truly qualified, have the skill set, the knowledge, they're rock stars, terminology I hear often, they don't need a job. They're gainfully employed. So your job is to attract them with an ad. So number one, an ad has to be written like a match.com ad, like you're trying to land your next date, so to speak. I see ads all the time where they're very outdated. They lead with what you must have, requirements, qualifications, things of that nature. Very heavy, very hard, very long-winded. People are trying to put a job description in a job ad. Anymore with all of the AI, the smartphones, one-click apply, all the algorithms on Indeed, LinkedIn, ZipRecruiter, all the platforms anymore, people are not reading jobs. What they see is an estate planning paralegal or a trust administration paralegal or a criminal defense attorney. They're seeing the ad, and you have to write it in twofold. One, leading with why somebody would want your job. What makes your position so unique? And when you're competing with anywhere from 50 to 100 other law firms within 100 miles of your office, so you need to make certain that you lead in those first two sentences with why somebody would want your job. And then you can put in there almost like an SEO ad, the same way you would attract a PNC, a prospective new client, that you're putting terminology in there. Like, think of it like keywords versus qualifications, requirements, what have you. You also want to refrain from, and in old school, people would put quote unquote tricks in ads. So please include a cover letter and spell the word purple backwards. So because they are, think they're testing for attention to detail. Candidates are interviewing with you and trying to engage with you as much as you are them. So the ad is just to create engagement, period, end of story. The days of putting an ad out anymore and getting 1,000 resumes, hundreds of resumes are over, unless there's spam and bots and things of that nature. So the ad is number one to attract people. When you create the ad, so you're communicating your culture, and be honest and be real in regards to that. You could put in there, we bring our dogs to work every day. Our clients love dogs. Well, if I have severe allergies, I'm not going to communicate with that ad. I'm not going to engage with it because that's not the play. We work a hybrid schedule, being incredibly clear with that, that it's one day a week or whatever it might be. Or if you're fully remote or if you do require in-person 5 days a week, communicate why. People love to come work at post-pandemic. They couldn't wait to get back in the office. We have a really cool vibe here. We have lunch every day. We have a gym here. We do yoga every single day. We bring in massage therapists once a week. Communicate. So you're basically walking people through the halls of your practice if that's how you are. Or we're very, very traditional. We wear a suit and tie. People that love to come here feel really love putting their power suit on every day. And we love to operate, you know, think of the movie Suits or however, just really paint the picture in a very creative and disruptive way.
Now, when I saw you speak at the ALA conference just a couple of months ago, and one thing that I wrote down, you mentioned, and it was that the first two lines of an ad matter. Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, I explained that just a little bit here, but it truly does matter. I can tell you, I have one law firm right now. They are growing gangbusters. They're almost like, they're just no shortage of leads, no shortage of revenue for growth and scaling or what have you. And they're looking for a PLA, a professional law firm administrator. They put in their ad right now that I am the entrepreneur. I am absolutely buried. I'm the biggest bottleneck within the firm. We have SOPs. I can't enforce them and I can't implement them because I am slammed in the courtroom, in the conference room all day long. Will you help me out? Are you the person that thrives in this environment? We have so many candidates. This firm has been looking for that position for months, close to a year, and we filled it in 30 days because we changed the ad from that regard. Because somebody, you know, like me, that speaks to my soul. I'm an 8 fact finder on the Colby. I love to come in and pull the junk drawer out, dump it on the proverbial conference room and organize everything and get it running like a well-oiled machine. So that attracts somebody, and it did. And we were able to close a position that was open for almost a year when we really communicated the pain and the opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, I'd like to go back for a moment and talk about how you can define the position that you need accurately in the advertisement. Because I know whenever I first started in the law field, I kept seeing paralegals and legal assistants, and I was like, I didn't know what the difference between them was. So can you share a few tips for how to define a position accurately for what it is that you're needing?
The easiest way is to start tracking everything. I call this a time effectiveness exercise and do a brain drain. And keep a legal pad or your notes pad on your smartphone, whatever it might be, in the things that are the greatest pain point for you. So it could be that every time you get documents back from your existing paralegal, maybe they're outsourced or an attorney, that they're never client ready, that they consistently have errors. And this next person that you're going to hire as you're adding to your team is going to serve as a second set of eyes. They might not be drafting, but they are an editor, for lack of a better term, or proofreader or what have you. You will communicate that in your ad and be incredibly clear. Do you need a paralegal for that? Not necessarily. And so keep asking yourself the powerful question, because to use your example of a legal assistant and paralegal, there's such a fine line between the two. Back in 08, 09, we all remember that time, right? And where law firms had to make cuts. They got rid of attorneys, which are the highest on the payroll or what have you, was the first cut. And a lot of paralegals had the opportunity to really step up and lead and serve like an attorney, maybe where they didn't have other opportunities in the past, other than giving legal advice, going into the courtroom, what have you. Well, then legal assistants were stepping in and really performing a lot of the legal or paralegal duties when before they might have just been printing, scanning, pulling files, closing files, what have you. So When you get clear on the position from a place of pain, what's not working is always a wonderful way to start crafting the job description. I would say if you have existing team on board, have a lunch and learn with them, sit down, get donuts, coffee, whatever speaks into everybody's belly, and whiteboard it and say, this one I'm thinking of what's not working, and go and create a flow chart. Go from the place of, okay, we get engaged. Now the file goes here. What are the subparts that occur from the place of completion and closing a matter? And when you really operate from that place, if you are adding to the team and you have existing people on the team, you want their voice, you want their part in there, because guess what? You're going to fly further faster because they're going to be a part of the onboarding. I would be incredibly descriptive in your job description, the bullet points, exactly. So your second set of eyes and your proofreading documents, by the time that they get to the attorney, they're for approval, not review. They're pretty dang close to client ready. And use like fourth grade reading level, as they say in copywriting. Be as descriptive as possible, where if you go back and read what you're looking for, you can see the person, actually their time template and their calendar. You can see how they're planning their work, working their plan, and how they're walking through the halls. I always tell people, get a time template out and say Monday through Friday from 8 until 6, if that's their hours. What if you were onboarding them, what would their day actually look like, and take it from there and put that in the job description? And that really goes back into need versus want.
Be descriptive is probably the best advice that you could give, because I know personally, whenever I've been looking for a new position, I've read through postings and I don't even know what it is that you would want from me, like what the day would look like, what the job duties would be. So be descriptive is just a perfect thing.
Yeah, when it comes to interviewing too, this kind of springboards into that a little bit. When I'm interviewing candidates, I will say to them, walk me through your day, walk me through your week, kind of show me the math, so to speak, of how you manage, lead, and facilitate your day. And I think that's even fantastic. If we are going to do a long form ad, I would say ditch the requirements, ditch the qualifications. Of course, those are very qualifications and requirements can be collapsed and combined. And those are maybe 3-5 bullets and 10 bullet points in there. And again, from an SEO perspective, but a great way, even hearing what you're saying here, is in the ad, go ahead and walk someone through their day and what their day and their week, the average day and week would look like. We do weekly stakeholders meetings. We do daily stand-up huddles. We start our day with this so we can plan our work, work our plan. You're going to be in every client meeting. We do roughly 16 client meetings a day. And then on Fridays and Mondays, we don't have client meetings. So that's when you're going to be kind of in the construction zone. You're going to be in the back of the house producing documents, doing your work. So don't worry, we already have that planned, and there are buffers and safety nets everywhere throughout your day and week.
Perfect. Okay, so let's say an attorney has decided what they need. They've made the advertisement, it's out there, and now they're starting to get applicants. What should attorneys or firm administrators look for in a resume?
First and foremost, don't get seduced by the resume, or don't cut people off because of the resume. These algorithms anymore, 7 out of 10 times when I call people and I say, it looks like you haven't worked in 2 months, or it looks like that you've left this firm, or you've been job hopping, or whatever it might be. People will say to me, where did you get that resume? Oh, let me guess, you got that resume off of Indeed. Indeed, and a lot of these platforms, what they do, here's the good news, is they keep every resume since the day they open their doors. The good news, Indeed's been around for, let's use that platform as an example, for 24 going on 25 years. And so every resume they have there Unfortunately, Indeed's algorithm is completely outdated. And so in the days when they started, you would have to fill out a form versus uploading a resume. And so then they would create a resume for you. And it is very, very outdated. So I tell people, of course, when you see great resumes and people are applying in this day and age in the legal field, immediately, time kills all deals, pick up the phone, call them, and then text them, and then email them as quick as possible. Get off of these recruitment platforms because they are getting hammered by other recruiters, other law firms, and the soonest you could get off of the hiring platform, the better engagement you're going to get from people. So I say in this day and age, there's not many resumes that are coming. So ideally a PLA and or an attorney or law firm administrator, whoever's handling it, can have an assistant or somebody on the team that you can engage to support you with this. If not, and it's yours, again, going back to that time chunking, make sure you have time in your calendar at least 3 times a day that you are going to be going into these platforms and looking at the resumes that are coming in. I can't say this enough. The people that secure rockstar employees are the ones who move fast. So you get the resume. If it looks halfway decent, maybe decent, it looks like they have the skills or locally, you know, their commute's only 20 minutes. If it's in-house, what have you, they applied. So your salary range is there. It's they're in agreement. Just pick up the phone as quick as possible. It's worth it to just communicate with them and say, hey, do you have 5 minutes to chat? So I would say in the interviewing process, doing a 5-minute interview, first and foremost, I see law firms wasting so much time going back and forth and back and forth trying to schedule an interview. And we're all time strapped, including the candidate. So we have to make this process as easy as possible on them in the beginning, right? Because you're just going for engagement. And it's no skin off your back, so to speak, or a waste of time. If you pick up the phone, do the 5-minute interview. I just real quick want to chat with you, want to confirm and clarify and verify a few things here. Number one, you saw the salary. Number two, it looks like you haven't worked in a while, or it's looking like you're job hopping. What's the story there? People appreciate that. And as much as you can do, then if they pass a phone interview, you schedule a Zoom interview with them. They pass that. Then we go into the in-person interview.
Okay, now let's flip it. From the applicant side, what can they do to help their resume stand out?
Great question. I would say number one, communicate upfront in the beginning of your resume, all of the tech stack and the platforms that you are accustomed to and that you have experience in. So if it's Clio, if it's Lawmatics, if it's TimeSlips, if it's put those up front, because in this day and age, most law firms are operating from some level of CRM automation, tech stack integration from intake to file management to e-filing to what have you. So if you can communicate at the front of your resume, top of your resume, side of your resume, depending on how you have it formatted, I would say top or the on the left in the sidebar there, communicating your technology and what you have experience in. Number two, when you put on your resume, attorneys and entrepreneurs and legal leaders love numbers and percentages. So you want to be put right in there, if it's billable hours, what your minimum requirement was and how many you were clipping on average monthly, putting it there. Number two, how many cases you currently are handling and in what regard. So number three, the average life cycle of a matter, of a file. And when you started, it was clipping at 24 months. When I came in, I'm handling 120. Tell the story of, again, how you're running your day, because these are the questions that are going to be asked in an interview. Number one. Number two, law firms are going to speak to you immediately, because you need to speak into somebody's listening in a way that makes it difference for them. When I see resumes like that, it communicates to me that this candidate, GWC, gets it, wants it, and has a capacity for it, as EOS says. And they understand that I am incredibly busy. I'm time strapped. This is why we need to hire. So you're taking a lot of the heavy lifting off me as an entrepreneur, as a boss, as a leader.
Perfect. Let's move on to the interview process. So when you're conducting an interview, is it possible to see past an applicant's nervousness to get a more accurate sense of their personality?
Typically, if it's a legal assistant, paralegal, attorney, C-suite position, people typically are not nervous anymore. If it's a receptionist or intake coordinator, they may be because they have the confidence and competence and don't necessarily, they do not need your job, right? So they're incredibly confident, not arrogant, in their skills. So they've been interviewing for a while. If they just opened up their profile, recruiters have hounded them and they're just shark infested waters. If I say nervousness, I name it right there. In the interview, it does a few things. Number one, it causes everyone to take a deep breath. So I'm like, okay, Molly, I am sensing that you're a little bit nervous. I just want to communicate. This is a meet and greet. I want you to interview me as much as I'm interviewing you. This is really a coaching conversation to see if this is a good fit for you. So I hope you're interviewing me just as much as I'm interviewing. I want you to come at with me. I'm expecting you to have some really clear, powerful questions in that moment. So I'll name it right up front. And even when it comes to the Zoom interview and the naming convention, I don't love to call them interviews for that first meeting. I like to call it, it's a meet and greet. It's an opportunity for us to talk about the duties, talk about the job, talk about the culture, see if this is a good fit for you, and see if it makes sense for you to come in person. I like doing that because people typically don't come in with a bundle of nerves, and I'm already communicating. I am expecting you to come in with questions, and I'm expecting that the person's doing their due diligence, they're doing some research on the firm, and we'll talk about that in a minute of how another way for firms to make them really attractive with their digital and social footprint as well. But I would name it right up front. Hey, you know, Susie, Molly, you know, whoever, I'm sensing that you're nervous right now. And people tend to really relax. Yes, I am. No. You don't need to be nervous here or what have you. We're really going to have an honest, well, respectful conversation. I like to get right to the point. I don't want to waste your time. And let's just talk about if it's a good fit for you or for us.
I really like how much you talk about being direct, because you've mentioned it in just about every step of the hiring process. And I think there are some places out there that leave a lot for the mind to wonder about. But I really like the idea of being direct with somebody about exactly what you need. Okay, you're nervous. You don't need to be. Everything's going to be fine. I think it takes a lot of the questioning out of everybody's minds and really allows the hiring process to move forward in a very easy way, we'll say.
Absolutely. Easy is a perfect word for that, because you want to communicate that it's ease and joy, and yes, stressful and a lot of work. I can't tell you how many attorneys that we work with will tee up the interview for them. They'll do the interview, and then after the interview, they'll come back to us. I didn't like how she did this. I'm concerned that he said that. And we go back to the candidate, and honestly, they're like, I'm out. I don't want to have the meeting after the meeting as much as the attorney doesn't want the meeting after the meeting. And at the end of the day, we're hiring human beings first and foremost, and human doing secondly. And at the core, human beings want clarity. They want communication. When I talk to people and ask, why are you talking to a recruiter today? You're making great money. You just told me that you're not unhappy in your current position. And when I peel away the layers of the onion, it boils down to one thing: communication. And when there is not upfront communication in real time, that's where all the bottlenecks and the breakdowns occur. So let's do it faster, easier upfront in the interview. I have some attorneys who are very tough, very direct, very blunt, missing a lot of compassion, empathy, compliment sandwich, and all that. I'm not trying to train them to sugarcoat or to be something they're not. They will walk into the interview and meet with someone and say, I'm completely stressed out. I know I don't lead with warm and fuzzy. That's just not my communication style. That's not how I vibe. I like to get to the point. I want just the headlines. I want people to communicate in the beginning, the middle, the end, and the why. I want people to come at me to propose solutions, not problems. Otherwise, I'm going to get frustrated and I'm going to go around you. That's just how I operate. And if that's not a good fit for you, but when we're doing the recruiting, we communicate that to people before. So that helps tremendously. So if there's someone in the firm, the PLA or an assistant that's doing the phone interview and the video interview, you want to communicate that front up at front and center. In fact, we have our clients record a video and they'll talk about the culture. 2, 3, 5 minutes. Some firms go 10 minutes and they really talk. They would say those exact words in the video, and you can inbox and DM passive candidates, candidates that you're poaching, candidates that you're applying this video of how you work, why you want to work here, how we operate, what we do, how we communicate, things of that nature. And you'll either attract people, but if you're for everyone, you're for nobody.
I like that. Very nice. Let's move on to questions in the interview process. So can you share some examples of questions that will help either party, either the candidate or the interviewer, weed out either one who is not good for the position?
This is fascinating because so often when we're working with firms, they'll say, do you have suggested questions? And of course, we have some suggested questions to submit, but I like to throw those out. And we get compliments all the time from candidates when they're meeting with the law firm. That is, was such a unique interview. I have never, ever been through an interview like that. And that's why they take our law firm's jobs. I would start truly with, you applied for this position, hit the hard questions first. It looks like you've job hopped. Tell me what happened at this position. Tell me what happened at that position. So you're getting all the unknowns out there front and center. And you want to make sure you don't gloss over it. You ask the question behind the question. For example, most often, tell me why you're leaving ABC Law Firm or why you're talking to us today. Why are you exploring looking? Oh, there's no growth or there's no opportunity. I'm hit the ceiling. There's just no growth there. Tell me what your definition of growth means. And then they answer it. If it's a suffice answer, you continue on. If not, you continue. What would growth look like, walk like, talk like 6 months from now, a year from now, should you come into our law firm? So you're always asking the question behind the question. And then I alluded to this earlier in regards to then you're talking. Most attorneys want to see the critical thinking. I hear this all the time from law firms. So-and-so is just missing the critical thinking, or I'm not seeing the critical thinking. So hit it head on, front and center. And you're asking them, what? Walk me through how you run your day. And that regard, it will tell you how they do time management, focus management. It will tell you in regards how they prioritize their work, how they handle upcoming tasks, how they handle overdue tasks, and then how they handle emergencies. If they do not hit that, give them hypothetical scenarios, real case studies from your pain points that you're experiencing in your law firm right now. And so you walk through, okay, client comes in, there's typos in the documents, X, Y, and Z. How do you handle it when the attorney rips you off of your current work or the paralegal or the PLA or what have you? So you want to give them real live scenarios. So often I'll see attorneys that get these fake scenarios from ChatGPT or their coaching or consultants or what have you, but you want to come from your real life pain and you actually want to communicate that. So for example, we don't have another person for a second set of eyes. So right now you're doing a tremendous amount of drafting in your firm and the biggest priority you're going to have to do, tell me how you review work. So if you are the second set of eyes and you're looking for things like, oh, I'm old school. I still like to print out paper. I like to have my yellow highlighter and my red pen, and I'm looking it on the computer and I still like to touch paper. I hear this so often from attorneys that, you know, nobody will print out paper anymore. Nobody will actually redline documents and see it, touch it, feel it. So you're coming from what's not working, your pain points, and then also the things that you really have been wishing for within a position.
Perfect. Let's move to the candidate side. Now, you touched on this a little bit earlier, questions that candidates can ask regarding the social presence of the firm and good questions that they can ask the interviewer. Could you speak more about that?
I just had this situation with a candidate. We've been recruiting for a law firm in some time now, and they found bad reviews. Let's just say they found negative reviews on Yelp, on Google, even some on Glassdoor or what have you. They also found that there was a bar complaint against the attorney. And so the candidate, when they come in, they're communicating that up front and saying, okay, I noticed that, you know, there was a slew of bad reviews that happened in June of 2026 or what have you. It seems like it was between June and July of 2026. In addition, I saw the correlation that there was a bar complaint there. I did some research on it, what have you. I also found great Google reviews, but what happened between June and July in your law firm? When it comes to, I have another firm that we've been placing for, and they have no digital or social footprint. They get all their business from referrals. They do not have a marketing course. They don't even have a Google My Business profile. They don't even have any social media presence. You have to remember, if you don't need it for attracting clients, congratulations and good for you. But we do need it for candidates, because so many candidates, I just had the attorney actually re-record a video to say, you're not going to find us any social media posts. We're not blogging on our website. We haven't even set up our Google, our business profile. We didn't think we needed it because we have more business and we can handle everything. We are so respected in the community, but now we are aware of this. So we're going to invest in an overseas digital and social media marketer. So name it in your video, but then also, so candidates, you know, they're confident, competent, clear, not nervous when they come to you with just as many hard conversations and or just seeking clarity.
Okay. So what are the next steps if a firm is doing everything that they possibly can, but they still aren't attracting the right applicant?
Like I said earlier, applicants are, the days of getting hundreds of resumes are over. So making certain that you spend time sourcing. Again, I'm a huge fan of putting this in your daily planning and putting it in your time template. Doesn't have to be the same time every day, but Indeed resume database has a phenomenal, you can pay extra money and go after passive candidates. Like I said, every resume since their inception is in there. This is where I'd say 95 of our placements come from. Same thing with LinkedIn Sales Navigator or LinkedIn Recruiter. If you are recruiting for several positions, it's worth the money to put in there. And so going after people, some people might call it poaching in that regard too, but it feels a little softer when you're sourcing from the resume database. So spending time going through resumes, putting the search terms in there of qualified candidates that you're looking for. And as much as possible, like I said, try to get their cell phone number, their email, get off the platform, send them the video. I cannot stress enough, just like you'll hear from all the legal marketers, that video is winning all day long for attracting PNCs. It's the same strategy for attracting potential candidates. So as much as possible, going and spending the money on those. Now with AI, buying lists, Apollo is another one that's fantastic. Lusha, very, very inexpensive, that integrates with your CRMs and Indeed and LinkedIn, and I believe ZipRecruiter now. So you can collapse time and get to candidates as quick as possible. In this day and age, texting wins. So what I say is, second you find someone, do the three-prong approach. You need to call them, text them, and then email them as quick as possible. And if you cannot get to that, then last resort is sending the message on the platform, the hiring platform. But you should be able to find their personal contact information. Finding them on LinkedIn, finding them on Meta, Instagram, and or Facebook, and sending them messages there. And of course, you want the message, just like the ad, to be incredibly compelling. Hey, Molly, I found your resume on Indeed. I know you're gainfully employed. I have a phenomenal opportunity I'd like to speak to you about. When do you have 5 minutes to chat, even if it's at night, weekend, on your commute, into court, out of court, what have you? I'll make myself available.
So let's say that somebody, an attorney, has done the opposite of everything that you've said here today. They went off of their wants. They didn't define their positions accurately. They just wanted to hire somebody and get them in, and they end up hiring the wrong candidate. What, if any, are the consequences for the firm if that should happen?
That's a great question. Make sure it is the wrong candidate. So often you maybe hired off of wants versus need. I'm always a huge fan in your onboarding process. So hopefully you have an onboarding process. So it's day 60, it's day 90, it's 5 months in. You should have a framework in there. That's why I am a huge proponent of an onboarding plan where you are doing 30-day check-ins, where you're sitting down, you're talking about what's working, what's not working, areas of improvement, you're anchoring to the job description, things of that nature. So if you hired from wants, there probably are some needs in there. So great opportunity versus firing and then, oh my, going back into the ad placement and sourcing frying pan. I understand the pain there is going back and having a reset conversation, going through the job description, because they may be the right hire. They're just in the wrong seat on the bus. So be incredibly clear on that. They might be having a horrible attitude and or not performing that to the level that you need for intake, but they're also a legal assistant in the back of the house, or they might be not doing a great job in the paralegal because they're consistently running to the front of the house. So you want to have a coaching conversation with them and re-interview them. If they are not the right person and you're doing onboarding correctly and you're doing consistent, what I like to call coaching conversations versus check-in, assuming you have a safe culture, a safe environment where we have radical candor, everybody's voice matters, we have upfront conversations that are not with the essence of that we're throwing people under the bus, they will support this decision with you, that it's not a good fit and for them to leave, and they'll support you with that transition.
And you've brought up the onboarding process, and that's actually my next question. Talk to us about what a successful onboarding process looks like.
Before somebody even starts, you want to get clear on that. So you launch ads, you're starting to do that beyond just having them sign the employee handbook, set up their paychecks, all those things. you know the HR stuff that has to occur on day one. What I believe in onboarding process is teach, show, do, go, grow. So we hire somebody as a legal assistant, and the number one duty within their job is document prep. Maybe it's trial prep binders. Maybe it's, let's just use that one example. You're actually teaching them how to do it. So you're having all the parts of it, the workflows in the CRM, the paper binder, if there's a SOP in a paper binder, you're laying it all out there and you're teaching them and showing them exactly how to do it. So often law firms make the mistake and they're saying, well, I invested all this money in SOPs. It's in the SOP, it's in the CRM, what have you. The best way to test a system is to give it to the new kid on the block. They will poke holes in it. In fact, they should be coming to you like a five-year-old saying, why are we doing it this way? I followed step one. There seems to be a big missing chunk between step one and step two. We might have added more technology, automations, what have you, and the SOP hasn't been updated in 6 months or 6 years. And so you're teaching them, you're showing them how to do it, and then you're allowing them to go. So teach, show, do. They're going to go do it, and then they're going to come back to you and present it to you and actually show you the math of exactly how they did it. This is when you can check the box and say, okay, Susie's on board with building trial prep. Now we can go on to the next bullet point. Now there might be 3-5 bullet points that collapse that are actually steps in the process of step one in the process, but be incredibly clear and intentional. So often when you're your people will write job descriptions and they will onboard them and you are litigation, paralegal, what have you. And they're trying to train them on every step of the process on day one. The question that I always ask, when we are sitting here 30 days from now, what needs to be happening consistently and persistently so you, attorney, trainer, manager, supervisor, whoever it is, have full faith and confidence that this person is trained up in the following areas? Just 30 days. So then we come back at 30 days, we do a scorecard and we check in. And then when that's complete, we move on to the next 30 days. It cannot be everything in their job description is once. A confused mind says no, even if I hear from attorneys all the time, I need somebody that comes batteries included. I don't have time to train. Well, you're hiring human beings. Assume they have all the skill set, the knowledge, a proof of concept. They've communicated that beautifully in the interview. You still need to spend time with them. They might have a skill set, but every attorney has their personal preference. Every law firm has a different CRM. People have a different way of going about it. So spend the time now. My favorite quote is, if you don't spend time for your wellness, you'll be forced to spend time on your illness.
Absolutely. Molly, you've given us such great advice today. Do you have anything further that you would like to tell our listeners that will help them retain great employees?
I would say just really have fun with it and treat it like gamification, if you will. I know hiring is very time consuming. It is very exhausting. But if you really put time in your calendar every day to give this the proper time and intention around it, and be intentional with crafting your ads, be intentional with your inboxing and trying to attract candidates, and you really follow the system, I do believe that you can turn around your experience with hiring, training, onboarding, and then ultimately, if it comes to a place of firing, because it'll be, for the most part, a mutual decision if you have your onboarding in place.
Very well said. Well, it looks like we have reached the end of our program. Thank you so much, Molly, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you like what you heard today, please rate us in Apple Podcasts and join us next time for another episode of the Florida Bar's Legal Field Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. I'm Autumn Chadwell. Until next time, thank you for listening.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit legalfuel.com. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Florida Bar's podcast via iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, and RSS. Find the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, the Florida Bar. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.
Are you looking to grow your practice? Consider joining the Florida Bar's Lawyer Referral Service. There's never been a better time to apply because we are currently waiving the $125 annual fee, so members who qualify can join the Florida Bar LRS for free. All panel members of the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service must be licensed in Florida, must be members in good standing, and must carry a minimum of $100,000 in professional liability insurance to participate. Panel members must also maintain an office physically located in one of the 52 Florida counties served by the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service. For more information and to apply, please go to floridabar.org/LRS.